had, I felt sure, left for a place. A place where she could stay long enough for it to matter, long enough for the next leaving to feel as good as the last one had. There is a corner of the world somewhere far away from here where no one knows what Margot Roth-Spiegelman means, and Margot is sitting in that corner, scrawling in her black notebook. The water began to get cold. I hadn't so much as touched a bar of soap, but I got out, wrapped a towel around my waist, and sat down at the computer. I dug up Radar's email about his Omnictionary program and downloaded the plugin. It really was pretty cool. First, I entered a zip code in downtown Chicago, clicked location, and asked for a radius of 20 miles. It spit back 100 responses, from Navy Pier to Deerfield. The first sentence of each entry came up on my screen, and I read through them in about 5 minutes. Nothing stood out. Then I tried a zip code near the Catskill Park in New York. Fewer responses this time, 82, organized by the date on which the Omnictionary page had been created. I started to read. Woodstock, New York, is a town in Ulster County, New York, perhaps best known for the eponymous Woodstock Concert, see Woodstock Concert, in 1969, a 3-day event featuring acts from Jimi Hendrix to Janis Joplin, which actually occurred in a nearby town. Lake Katrine is a small lake in Ulster County, New York, often visited by Henry David Thoreau. The Catskill Park comprises 700,000 acres of land in the Catskill Mountains, owned jointly by state and local governments, including a 5% share held by New York City, which gets much of its water from reservoirs partly inside the park. Roscoe, New York, is a hamlet in New York State, which according to a recent census contains 261 households. Agloe, New York, is a fictitious village created by the Esso Company in the early 1930s and inserted into tourist maps as a copyright trap or paper town. I clicked on the link, and it took me to the full article, which continued. Located at the intersection of two dirt roads just north of Roscoe, New York, Agloe was the creation of mapmakers Otto G. Lindberg and Ernest Alpers, who invented the town name by anagramming their initials. Copyright traps have featured in map-making for centuries. Cartographers create fictional landmarks, streets, and municipalities and place them obscurely into their maps. If the fictional entry is found on another cartographer's map, it becomes clear a map has been plagiarized. Copyright traps are also sometimes known as key traps, paper streets, and paper towns. See also fictitious entries. Although few cartographic corporations acknowledge their existence, copyright traps remain a common feature even in contemporary maps. In the 1940s, Agloe, New York, began appearing on maps created by other companies. Esso suspected copyright infringement and prepared several lawsuits, but in fact, an unknown resident had built the Agloe General Store at the intersection that appeared on the Esso map. The building, which still stands, needs citation, is the only structure in Agloe, which continues to appear on many maps and is traditionally recorded as having a population of zero. Every Omnictionary entry contains subpages where you can view all the edits ever made to the page and any discussion by Omnictionary members about it. The Agloe page hadn't been edited by anyone in almost a year, but there was one recent comment on the talk page by an anonymous user. FYI, whoever, capital E, edits this, the capital P, population of Agloe, lowercase a, will actually be, capital O, 1 until May 29th at noon. I recognized the capitalization immediately. The rules of capitalization are so unfair to words in the middle of a sentence. My throat tightened, but I forced myself to calm down. The comment had been left 15 days ago. It had been sitting there all that time, waiting for me. I looked at the clock on the computer. I had just under 24 hours. For the first time in weeks, she seemed completely and undeniably alive to me. She was alive. For one more day, at least, she was alive. I had focused on her whereabouts for so long in an attempt to keep me from obsessively wondering whether she was alive that I had no idea how terrified I'd been until now. But, oh my God, she was alive. I jumped up, let the towel drop, and called Radar. I cradled the phone in the crook of my neck while pulling on boxers and then shorts. I know what paper towns means. Do you have your handheld?
Yeah, you should really be here, dude. They're about to make us line up.
I heard Ben shout into the phone.
Tell him he better be naked.
Radar, I said, trying to convey the importance of it. Look up the page for Agloe, New York. Got it?
Yes, reading.
Hold on. Wow. Wow.
This could be the Catskills spot on the map.
Yes, I think so. It's pretty close. Go to the discussion page.
Radar? Jesus Christ.
I know! I shouted. I didn't hear his response because I was pulling my shirt on, but when the phone got back to my ear, I could hear him talking to Ben. I just hung up. Online, I searched for driving directions from Orlando to Agloe, but the map system had never heard of Agloe, so instead, I searched for Roscoe. Averaging 65 miles per hour, the computer said it would be a 19-hour and 4-minute trip. It was 2:15. I had 21 hours and 45 minutes to get there. I printed the directions, grabbed the keys to the minivan, and locked the front door behind me. It's 19 hours and 4 minutes away, I said into the cell phone. It was Radar's cell phone, but Ben had answered it.
So what are you going to do? He asked. Are you flying there?
No, I don't have enough money. And anyway, it's like 8 hours away from New York City, so I'm driving. Suddenly, Radar had the phone back.
How long is the trip?
19 hours and 4 minutes.
According to who?
Google Maps.
Crap, Radar said. None of those map programs calculate for traffic. I'll call you back, and hurry. We gotta line up, like, right now.
I'm not going. Can't risk the time, I said, but I was talking to dead air. Radar called back a minute later.
If you average 65 miles per hour, don't stop, and account for average traffic patterns, it's going to take you 23 hours and 9 minutes, which puts you there just after 1 p.m., so you're going to have to make up time when you can.
What?
But the... Radar said. I don't want to criticize, but maybe on this particular topic, the person who is chronically late needs to listen to the person who is always punctual. But you've got to come here at least for a second, because otherwise your parents will freak out when you don't show when your name is called. And also, not that it is the most important consideration or anything, but I'm just saying, you have all our beer in there.
I obviously don't have time, I answered. Ben leaned into the phone.
Don't be an asshat. It'll cost you 5 minutes.
Okay, fine. I hooked a right on red and gunned the minivan. It had better pickup than Mom's, but only just barely, toward school. I made it to the gym parking lot in 3 minutes. I did not park the minivan so much as I stopped it in the middle of the parking lot and jumped out. As I sprinted toward the gym, I saw three robed individuals running toward me. I could see Radar's spindly dark legs as his robe blew up around him, and next to him, Ben, wearing sneakers without socks. Lacey was just behind them.
You get the beer, I said as I ran past him. I gotta talk to my parents.
The families of graduates were spread out across the bleachers, and I ran back and forth across the basketball court a couple of times before I spotted Mom and Dad about halfway up. They were waving at me. I ran up the stairs two at a time, and so was a little out of breath when I knelt down next to them and said,
Okay, so I'm not going to walk, because I think I found Margot, and I just have to go, and I'll have my cell phone on... And please, don't be pissed at me, and thank you again for the car.
And my mom wrapped her hand around my wrist and said,
What? Quentin, what are you talking about? Slow down.
I said,
I'm going to Agloe, New York, and I have to go right now. That's the whole story. Okay, I gotta go. I'm crunched for time here. I have my cell. Okay, I love you.
I had to pull free from her light grasp. Before they could say anything, I bounded down the stairs and took off, sprinting back toward the minivan. I was inside and had the thing in gear and was starting to move when I looked over and saw Ben sitting in the passenger seat.
Get the beer and get out of the car, I shouted.
We're coming with, he said.
You'd fall asleep if you tried to drive for that long anyway.
I turned back, and Lacey and Radar were both holding cell phones to their ears.
Gotta tell my parents, Lacey explained, tapping the phone. Come on, Q, go, 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 go!
Part 3. The Vessel. The First Hour.
It takes a little while for everyone to explain to their parents that, one, we're all going to miss graduation, and, two, we're driving to New York to, three, see a town that may or may not technically exist, and hopefully, four, intercept the omnictionary poster, who according to the randomly capitalized evidence is 5, Margot Roth Spiegelman. Radar is the last to get off the phone, and when he finally does, he says,
I'd like to make an announcement. My parents are very annoyed that I'm missing graduation. My girlfriend is also annoyed because we were scheduled to do something very special in about 8 hours. I don't want to get into details about it, but this had better be one fun road trip.
Your ability to not lose your virginity is an inspiration to us all,
Ben says next to me. I glance at Radar through the rearview mirror.
Woohoo! Road trip!
I tell him. In spite of himself, a smile creeps across his face. The pleasure of leaving. By now, we are on I-4, and traffic is fairly light, which in and of itself is borderline miraculous. I'm in the far left lane, driving 8 miles an hour over the 55 miles per hour speed limit, because I heard once that you don't get pulled over until you're going 9 miles an hour over the speed limit. Very quickly, we all settle into our roles. In the way back, Lacey is the provisioner. She lists aloud everything we currently have for the trip. The half of a Snickers that Ben was eating when I called about Margot. The 212 beers in the back. The directions I printed out. And the following items from her purse. 8 sticks of wintergreen gum. A pencil. Some tissue. 3 tampons. 1 pair of sunglasses. Some chapstick. Her house keys. A YMCA membership card. A library card. Some receipts. $35. And a BP card. From the back, Lacey says,
"This is exciting. We're like under-provisioned pioneers. I wish we had more money, though."
"At least we have the BP card," I say. "We can get gas and food." I look up into the rearview mirror and see Radar, wearing his graduation gown, looking over into Lacey's purse. The graduation gown has a bit of a low-cut neck, so I can see some curled chest hairs. "You got any boxers in there?" he asks.
"Seriously, we better be stopping at the Gap," Ben adds.
Radar's job, which he begins with a calculator on his handheld, is research and calculations. He's alone in the row of seats behind me, with the directions and the minivan owner's manual spread out next to him. He's figuring out how fast we need to travel in order to make it by noon tomorrow, how many times we'll need to stop in order to keep the car from running out of gas, the locations of BP stations on our route, and how long each stop will be, and how much time we'll lose in the process of slowing down to exit.
"We gotta stop 4 times for gas. The stops will have to be very, very short. 6 minutes at the most off-highway. We're looking at 3 long areas of construction, plus traffic in Jacksonville, Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia, although it will help that we're driving through D.C. around 3 in the morning. According to my calculations, our average cruising speed should be around 72. How fast are you going?"
"63, I say. "The speed limit is 55.
"Go 72, he says.
"I can't. It's dangerous, and I'll get a ticket."
"Go 72, he says again.
I press my foot down hard on the gas. The difficulty is partly that I am hesitant to go 72 and partly that the minivan itself is hesitant to go 72. It begins to shake in a way that implies it might fall apart. I stay in the far left lane, even though I'm still not the fastest car on the road, and I feel bad that people are passing me on the right, but I need clear road ahead because, unlike everyone else on this road, I can't slow down. And this is my role. My role is to drive and to be nervous. It occurs to me that I've played this role before. And Ben? Ben's role is to need to pee. At first, it seems like his main role is going to be complaining about how we don't have any CDs and that all the radio stations in Orlando suck except for the college radio station, which is already out of range. But soon enough, he abandons that role for his true and faithful calling, needing to pee.
"I need to pee,"
he says at 3:06. We've been on the road for 43 minutes. We have approximately a day left in our drive.
"Well," says Radar, "the good news is that we will be stopping. The bad news is that it won't be for another 4 hours and 30 minutes.
"I think I can hold it," Ben says.
At 3:10, he announces,
"Actually, I really need to pee. Really."
The chorus responds,
"Hold it."
He says,
"But I..."
And the chorus responds again,
"Hold it."
It is fun for now, Ben needing to pee and us needing him to hold it. He is laughing and complaining that laughing makes him need to pee more. Lacey jumps forward and leans in behind him and starts tickling at his sides. He laughs and whines, and I laugh too, keeping the speedometer on 72. I wonder if she created this journey for us on purpose or by accident. Regardless, it's the most fun I've had since the last time I spent hours behind the wheel of a minivan. Hour 2. I'm still driving. We turn north onto I-95, snaking our way up Florida, near the coast, but not quite on it. It is all pine trees here, too skinny for their height, built like I am. But there is mostly just the road, passing cars, and occasionally being passed by them, always having to remember who is in front of you and who behind, who is approaching, and who is drifting away. Lacey and Ben are sitting together on the bench seat now, and Radar is in the way back, and they're all playing a retarded version of I Spy, in which they are only allowed to spy things that cannot physically be seen.
"I spy with my little eye something tragically hip," Radar says.
"Is it the way Ben smiles mostly with the right side of his mouth?" asks Lacey.
"No," says Radar. "Also, don't be so gooey about Ben. It's gross."
"Is it the idea of wearing nothing under your graduation gown and then having to drive to New York while all the people in passing cars assume you're wearing a dress?"
"No," says Radar. "That's just tragic."
Lacey smiles.
"You'll learn to like dresses. You get to enjoy the breeze."
"Oh, I know," I say from the front. "You spy a 24-hour road trip in a minivan. Hip because road trips always are. Tragic because the gas we're guzzling will destroy the planet." Radar says no, and they keep guessing. I am driving and going 72 and praying not to get a ticket and playing metaphysical I Spy. The tragically hip thing turns out to be failing to turn in your rented graduation robes on time. I blow past a cop parked on the grass median. I grip the steering wheel hard with both hands, feeling sure he'll race up to pull us over. But he doesn't. Maybe he knows I'm only speeding because I have to. Hour 3. Ben is sitting shotgun again. I'm still driving. We're all hungry. Lacey distributes one piece of wintergreen gum to each of us, but it's cold comfort. She's writing a gigantic list of everything we're going to buy at the BP when we stop for the first time. This had better be one extraordinarily well-stocked BP station, because we are going to clear the bitch out. Ben keeps bouncing his legs up and down.
"Will you stop that? I've had to pee for 3 hours."
"You've mentioned that."
"I can feel the pee all the way up to my rib cage," he says. "I'm honestly full of pee. Bro, right now, 70% of my body weight is pee."
"Uh-huh," I say, barely cracking a smile. "It's funny and all, but I'm tired."
"I feel like I might start crying and that I'm going to cry pee."
That gets me. I laugh a little. The next time I glance over, a few minutes later, Ben has a hand tight around his crotch, the fabric of a gown bunched up.
"What the hell?"
I ask.
"Dude, I have to go. I'm pinching off the flow."
He turns around then.
"Radar, how long till we stop?"
"We have to go at least 143 more miles in order to keep it down to 4 stops, which means about 1 hour and 58.5 minutes if Q keeps pace."
"I'm keeping up,"
I shout. We are just north of Jacksonville, getting close to Georgia.
"I can't make it, Radar. Give me something to pee in."
The chorus erupts. "No, absolutely not. Just hold it like a man. Hold it like a Victorian lady holds on to her maidenhead. Hold it with dignity and grace, like the President of the United States is supposed to hold the fate of the free world."
"Give me something or I will pee on this seat, and hurry!"
"Oh, Christ,"
Radar says as he unbuckles his seatbelt. He climbs into the way back and then reaches down and opens the cooler. He returns to his seat, leans forward, and hands Ben a beer.
"Thank God it's a twist-off,"
Ben says, gathering a handful of robe and then opening the bottle. Ben rolls down the window, and I watch out the side-view mirror as the beer floats past the car and splashes onto the interstate. Ben manages to get the bottle underneath his robe without showing us the world's purportedly largest balls, and then we all sit and wait, too disgusted to look. Lacey is just saying,
"Can't you just hold it?"
when we all hear it. I've never heard the sound before, but I recognize it anyway. It is the sound of pee hitting the bottom of a beer bottle. It sounds almost like music, revolting music with a very fast beat. I glance over and I see the relief in Ben's eyes. He is smiling, staring into the middle distance.
"The longer you wait, the better it feels," he says.
The sound soon changes from the clinking of pee on bottle to the blopping of pee on pee, and then, slowly, Ben's smile fades.
"Bro, I think I need another bottle,"
he says suddenly.
"Another bottle, stat!"
I shout.
"Another bottle coming up."
In a flash, I can see Radar bent over the back seat, his head in the cooler, digging a bottle out of the ice. He opens it with his bare hand, cracks one of the back windows open, and pours the beer out through the crack. Then he leaps to the front, his head between Ben and me, and holds the bottle out for Ben, whose eyes are darting around in panic.
The exchange is going to be, complicated, Ben says.
There's a lot of fumbling going on beneath that robe, and I'm trying not to imagine what's happening when out from underneath a robe comes a Miller Lite bottle filled with pee, which looks astoundingly similar to Miller Lite. Ben deposits the full bottle in the cup holder, grabs the new one from Radar, and then sighs with relief. The rest of us, meanwhile, are left to contemplate the pee in the cup holder. The road is not particularly bumpy, but the shocks on the minivan leave something to be desired, so the pee swishes back and forth at the top of the bottle.
Ben, if you get pee in my brand new car, I'm going to cut your balls off.
Still peeing, Ben looks over at me, smirking.
You're gonna need a hell of a big knife, bro.
And then finally, I hear the stream slow. He's soon finished, and then in one swift motion, he throws the new bottle out the window. The full one follows. Lacey is fake gagging, or maybe really gagging. Radar says,
God, did you wake up this morning and drink 18 gallons of water?
But Ben is beaming. He is holding his fists in the air, triumphant, and he is shouting,
Not a drop on the seat! I'm Ben Starling, first clarinet, WPHS marching band, keg stand record holder, pee in the car champion. I shook up the world. I must be the greatest.
35 minutes later, as our third hour comes to a close, he asks in a small voice,
When are we stopping again?
1 hour and 3 minutes if Q keeps pace, Radar answers.
Okay,
Ben says.
Okay, good, because I have to pee.
Hour 4. For the first time, Lacey asks,
Are we there yet?
We laugh. We are, however, in Georgia, a state I love and adore for this reason and this reason only. The speed limit here is 70, which means I can up my speed to 77. Aside from that, Georgia reminds me of Florida. We spend the hour preparing for our first stop. This is an important stop because I am very, 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 very hungry and dehydrated. For some reason, talking about the food we'll buy at the BP eases the pangs. Lacey prepares a grocery list for each of us, written in small letters on the backs of receipts she found in her purse. She makes Ben lean out the passenger side window to see which side the gas cap is on. She forces us to memorize our grocery list and then quizzes us. We talk through our visit to the gas station several times. It needs to be as well executed as a stock car pit stop.
One more time, Lacey says. I'm the gas man, Radar says. After I start the fill-up, I run inside while the pump is pumping, even though I'm supposed to stay near the pump at all times, and I give you the card. Then I return to the gas. I take the card to the guy behind the counter, Lacey says.
Or girl, I add.
Not relevant, Lacey answers.
I'm just saying. Don't be so sexist.
Oh, whatever, Q. I take the card to the person behind the counter. I tell her or him to ring up everything we bring. Then I pee.
I add, Meanwhile, I'm getting everything on my list and bringing it up to the front. Ben says,
And I'm peeing. Then when I finish peeing, I'll get the stuff on my list.
Most importantly, shirts, Radar says. People keep looking at me funny. Lacey says,
I sign the receipt when I get out of the bathroom.
And then the moment the tank is full, I'm gonna get in the minivan and drive away, so y'all had better be in there. I will seriously leave your asses. You have 6 minutes, Radar says. 6 minutes, I say, nodding my head. And Lacey and Ben repeat it also.
6 minutes.
6 minutes!
At 5:35 p.m., with 900 miles to go, Radar informs us that, according to his handheld, the next exit will have a BP. As I pull into the gas station, Lacey and Radar are crouched behind the sliding door in the back. Ben, seatbelt unbuckled, has one hand on the passenger door handle and the other on the dashboard. I maintain as much speed as I can for as long as I can and then slam on the brakes right in front of the gas tank. The minivan jolts to a halt and we fly out the doors. Radar and I cross in front of the car. I toss him the keys and then run all out to the food mart. Lacey and Ben have beat me to the doors, but only just barely.
While Ben bolts for the bathroom, Lacey explains to the gray-haired woman, it is a woman, that we're going to be buying a lot of stuff and that we're in a huge hurry, and that she should just ring items up as we deliver them, and that it will all go on her BP card. And the woman seems a little bewildered, but agrees. Radar runs in, his robe aflutter, and hands Lacey the card. Meanwhile, I'm running through the aisles, getting everything on my list. Lacey's on liquids, Ben's on non-perishable supplies, I'm on food. I sweep through the place like I'm a cheetah, and the tortilla chips are injured gazelles. I run an armful of chips and beef jerky and peanuts to the front counter, then jog to the candy aisle. A handful of Mentos, a handful of Snickers, and, oh, it's not on the list, but screw it, I love Nerds, so I add 3 packages of Nerds. I run back and then head over to the deli counter, which consists of ancient turkey sandwiches wherein the turkey strongly resembles ham. I grab 2 of those. On my way back to the cash register, I stop for a couple Starbursts, a package of Twinkies, and an indeterminate number of Go Fast nutrition bars. I run back. Ben's standing there in his graduation gown, handing the woman T-shirts and $4 sunglasses. Lacey runs up with gallons of soda, energy drinks, and bottles of water. Big bottles, the kind of bottles that even Ben's pee can't fill.
1 minute!
Lacey shouts, and I panic. I'm turning in circles, my eyes darting around the store, trying to remember what I'm forgetting. I glance down at my list. I seem to have everything, but I feel like there's something important I've forgotten. Something. Come on, Jacobson. Chips, candy, turkey that looks like ham, PBJ, and what? What are the other food groups? Meat, chips, candy, and cheese! Crackers! I say, much too loud, and then I dart to the crackers, grabbing cheese crackers and peanut butter crackers and some of Grandma's peanut butter cookies for good measure, and then I run back and toss them across the counter. The woman has already bagged up 4 plastic bags of groceries, almost $100 total, not even counting gas. I'll be paying back Lacey's parents all summer. There's only 1 moment of pause, and it's after the woman behind the counter swipes Lacey's BP card. I glance at my watch. We're supposed to leave in 20 seconds. Finally, I hear the receipt printing. The woman tears it out of the machine. Lacey scribbles her name, and then Ben and I grab the bags and dash for the car. Radar revs the engine as if to say hustle, and we are running through the parking lot, Ben's robe flowing in the wind so that he looks vaguely like a dark wizard, except that his pale, skinny legs are visible and his arms hug plastic bags. I can see the back of Lacey's legs beneath her dress, her calves tight in mid-stride. I don't know how I look, but I know how I feel. Young. Goofy. Infinite. I watch as Lacey and Ben pile in through the open sliding door. I follow, landing on plastic bags and Lacey's torso. Radar guns the car as I slam the sliding door shut, and then he peels out of the parking lot, marking the first time in the long and storied history of the minivan that anyone anywhere has ever used one to burn rubber. Radar turns left onto the highway at a somewhat unsafe speed and then merges back onto the interstate. We're 4 seconds ahead of schedule. And just like with the NASCAR pit stops, we share high fives and back slaps. We are well supplied. Ben has plenty of containers into which he can urinate. I have adequate beef jerky rations. Lacey has her Mentos. Radar and Ben have T-shirts to wear over their robes. The minivan has become a biosphere. Give us gas and we can keep going forever. Hour 5. Okay, maybe we are not that well provisioned after all. In the rush of the moment, it turns out that Ben and I made some moderate, although not fatal, mistakes. With Radar alone up front, Ben and I sit in the first bench, unpacking each bag and handing the items to Lacey in the way back. Lacey, in turn, is sorting items into piles, based on an organizational schema only she understands. Why is the NyQuil not in the same pile as the no-dose? I ask. Shouldn't all the medicines be together?
Q, sweetie, you're a boy. You don't know how to do these things. The no-dose is with the chocolate and the Mountain Dew because those things all contain caffeine and help you stay up. The NyQuil is with the beef jerky because eating meat makes you feel tired.
Fascinating, I say. After I've handed Lacey the last of the food from my bags, Lacey asks,
Q, where's the food that is, you know, good?
Huh? Lacey produces a copy of the grocery list she wrote for me and reads from it.
Bananas, apples, dried cranberries, raisins.
Oh, I say. Oh, right. The 4th food group wasn't crackers.
Q,
she says, furious.
I can't eat any of this.
Ben puts a hand on her elbow.
Well, but you can eat Grandma's cookies. They're not bad for you. They were made by Grandma. Grandma wouldn't hurt you.
Lacey blows a strand of hair out of her face. She seems genuinely annoyed.
Plus, I tell her, there are go-fast bars. They're fortified with vitamins.
Yeah, vitamins and like 30 grams of fat, she says.
From the front, Radar announces, don't you go talking bad about go-fast bars. You want me to stop this car?
Whenever I eat a go-fast bar, Ben says, I'm always like, so this is what blood tastes like to mosquitoes.
I half unwrap a fudge brownie go-fast bar and hold it in front of Lacey's mouth.
Just smell it, I say. Smell the vitamin-y deliciousness.
You're going to make me fat.
Also Zitty, Ben says. Don't forget Zitty.
Lacey takes the bar from me and reluctantly bites into it. She has to close her eyes to hide the orgasmic pleasure inherent in go-fast tasting.
Oh, my God. That tastes like hope feels.
Finally, we unpack the last bag. It contains two large T-shirts, which Radar and Ben are very excited about because it means they can be guys wearing gigantic shirts over silly robes instead of just guys wearing silly robes. But when Ben unfurls the T-shirts, there are two small problems. First, it turns out that a large T-shirt in a Georgia gas station is not the same size as a large T-shirt at, say, Old Navy. The gas station shirt is gigantic, more garbage bag than shirt. It is smaller than the graduation robes, but not by much. But this problem rather pales in comparison to the other problem, which is that both T-shirts are embossed with huge Confederate flags. Printed over the flag are the words, heritage, not hate.
Oh, no, you didn't, Radar says when I show him why we're laughing. Ben Starlin, you better not have bought your token black friend a racist shirt.
I just grabbed the first shirts I saw, bro.
Don't bro me right now, Radar says,
but he's shaking his head and laughing. I hand him a shirt and he wiggles into it while driving with his knees.
I hope I get pulled over, he says. I'd like to see how the cop responds to a black man wearing a Confederate T-shirt over a black dress.
Hour 6. For some reason, the stretch of I-95 just south of Florence, South Carolina, is the place to drive a car on a Friday evening. We get bogged down in traffic for several miles, and even though Radar is desperate to violate the speed limit, he's lucky when he can go 30. Radar and I sit up front, and we try to keep from worrying by playing a game we've just invented called That Guy is a Gigolo. In the game, you imagine the lives of people in the cars around you. We're driving alongside a Hispanic woman in a beat-up old Toyota Corolla. I watch her through the early darkness. Left her family to move here, I say. Illegal. Sends money back home on the third Tuesday of every month. She's got two little kids. Her husband is a migrant. He's in Ohio right now. He only spends 3 or 4 months a year at home, but they still get along really well. Radar leans in front of me and glances over at her for half a second.
Christ, Q, it's not so melodra-tragic as that. She's a secretary at a law firm. Look how she's dressed. It has taken her 5 years, but she's now close to getting a law degree of her own. And she doesn't have kids or a husband. She's got a boyfriend, though. He's a little flighty, scared of commitment. White guy, a little nervous about the jungle fever angle of the whole thing.
She's wearing a wedding ring, I point out. In Radar's defense, I've been able to stare at her. She is to my right, just below me. I can see through her tinted windows, and I watch as she sings along to some song, her unblinking eyes on the road. There are so many people. It is easy to forget how full the world is of people, full to bursting, and each of them imaginable and consistently misimagined. I feel like this is an important idea, one of those ideas that your brain must wrap itself around slowly, the way pythons eat. But before I can get any further, Radar speaks.
She's just wearing that so pervs like you don't come on to her, Radar explains.
Yeah, maybe. I smile, pick up the half-finished go-fast bar sitting on my lap, and take a bite. It's quiet again for a while, and I'm thinking about the way you can and cannot see people, about the tinted windows between me and this woman who is still driving right beside us, both of us in cars with all these windows and mirrors everywhere as she crawls along with us on this packed highway. When Radar starts talking again, I realize that he has been thinking, too.
The thing about That Guy is a Gigolo, Radar says. I mean, the thing about it as a game is that in the end it reveals a lot more about the person doing the imagining than it does about the person being imagined.
Yeah, I say. I was just thinking that. And I can't help but feel that Whitman, for all his blustering beauty, might have been just a bit too optimistic. We can hear others, and we can travel to them without moving, and we can imagine them, and we are all connected one to the other by a crazy root system like so many leaves of grass. But the game makes me wonder whether we can really ever fully become another. Hour 7. We finally pass a jackknife truck and get back up to speed, but radar calculates in his head that we'll need to average 77 from here to Aglo. It has been one entire hour since Ben announced that he needed to pee, and the reason for this is simple. He is sleeping. At 6 o'clock exactly, he took NyQuil. He lay down in the way back, and then Lacey and I strapped both seatbelts around him. This made him even more uncomfortable, but one, it was for his own good, and two, we all knew that in 20 minutes, no discomfort would matter to him at all, because he would be dead asleep. And so he is now. He will be awoken at midnight. I have just put Lacey to bed now, at 9 p.m., in the same position in the back seat. We will wake her at 2 a.m. The idea is that everybody sleeps for a shift, so we won't be taping our eyelids open by tomorrow morning when we come rolling into Aglo. The minivan has become a kind of very small house. I am sitting in the passenger seat, which is the den. This is, I think, the best room in the house. There is plenty of space, and the chair is quite comfortable. Scattered about the carpet beneath the passenger seat is the office, which contains a map of the United States Ben got at the BP, the directions I printed out, and the scrap paper onto which Radar has scrawled his calculations about speed and distance. Radar sits in the driver's seat, the living room. It is a lot like the den, only you can't be as relaxed when you're there. Also, it's cleaner. Between the living room and the den, we have the center console, or kitchen. Here, we keep a plentiful supply of beef jerky and go-fast bars and this magical energy drink called Bluefin, which Lacey put on the shopping list. Bluefin comes in small, fancily contoured glass bottles, and it tastes like blue cotton candy. It also keeps you awake better than anything in all of human history, although it makes you a bit twitchy. Radar and I have agreed to keep drinking it until 2 hours before our rest periods. Mine starts at midnight when Ben gets up. The first bench seat is the first bedroom. It's the less desirable bedroom, because it is close to the kitchen and the living room, where people are awake and talking, and sometimes there is music on the radio. Behind that is the second bedroom, which is darker and quieter and altogether superior to the first bedroom. And behind that is the refrigerator, or cooler, which currently contains the 210 beers that Ben has not yet peed into, the turkey that looks like ham sandwiches, and some Coke. There is much to recommend this house. It is carpeted throughout. It has central air conditioning and heating. The whole place is wired for surround sound. Admittedly, it contains only 55 square feet of living space, but you can't beat the open floor plan. Hour 8. Just after we pass into South Carolina, I catch Radar yawning and insist upon a driver switch. I like driving anyway. This vehicle may be a minivan, but it's my minivan. Radar scoots out of his seat and into the first bedroom while I grab the steering wheel and hold it steady, quickly stepping over the kitchen and into the driver's seat. Traveling, I'm finding, teaches you a lot of things about yourself. For instance, I never thought myself to be the kind of person who pees into a mostly empty bottle of Bluefin energy drink while driving through South Carolina at 77 miles per hour, but in fact I am that kind of person. Also, I never previously knew that if you mix a lot of pee with a little Bluefin energy drink, the result is this amazing incandescent turquoise color. It looks so pretty that I want to put the cap on the bottle and leave it in the cup holder so Lacey and Ben can see it when they wake up. But Radar feels differently. "If you don't throw that shit out the window right now, I'm ending our 11-year friendship," he says. "It's not shit," I say. "It's pee." "Out," he says. And so I litter. In the side view mirror, I can see the bottle hit the asphalt and burst open like a water balloon. Radar sees it too. "Oh my God," Radar says. "I hope that's like one of those traumatic events that is so damaging to my psyche that I just forget it ever happened." Hour 9. I never previously knew that it is possible to become tired of eating go-fast nutrition bars. But it is possible. I'm only 2 bites into my 4th of the day when my stomach turns. I pull open the center console and stick it back inside. We refer to this part of the kitchen as the pantry.
I wish we had some apples, Radar said. God, wouldn't an apple taste good right now?
I sigh. Stupid fourth food group. Also, even though I stopped drinking Bluefin a few hours ago, I still feel exceedingly twitchy.
I still feel kind of twitchy, I say.
Yeah, Radar says. I can't stop tapping my fingers.
I look down. He is drumming his fingers silently against his knees.
I mean,
he says,
I actually cannot stop.
Okay, yeah, I'm not tired, so we'll stay up till 4, and then we'll get them up, and we'll sleep till 8.
Okay,
he says. There's a pause. The road has emptied out now. There's only me and the semi-trucks, and I feel like my brain is processing information at 11,000 times its usual pace, and it occurs to me that what I'm doing is very easy, that driving on the interstate is the easiest and most pleasant thing in the world. All I have to do is stay in between the lines and make sure that no one is too close to me and I am not too close to anyone and keep leaving. Maybe it felt like this for her, too, but I could never feel like this alone. Radar breaks the silence.
Well, if we're not going to sleep until 4...
I finish his sentence.
Yeah, then we should probably just open another bottle of Bluefin.
And so we do. Hour 10. It is time for our second stop. It is 12:13 in the morning. My fingers do not feel like they are made of fingers. They feel like they are made of motion. I am tickling the steering wheel as I drive. After Radar finds the nearest BP on his handheld, we decide to wake up Lacey and Ben. I say,
Hey guys, we're about to stop.
No reaction. Radar turns around and puts a hand on Lacey's shoulder.
Lace, time to get up.
Nothing. I turn on the radio. I find an oldie station. It's the Beatles. The song is Good Morning. I turn it up some. No response. So Radar turns it up more. And then more. And then the chorus comes and he starts singing along. And then I start singing along. I think it is finally my atonal screeching that awakes them.
Make it stop!
Ben shouts. We turn down the music.
Ben, we're stopping. Do you have to pee?
He pauses, and there's a kerfuffle in the darkness back there, and I wonder if he has some physical strategy for checking the fullness of his bladder.
I think I'm okay, actually,
he says.
Okay, then you're on gas.
As the only boy who has not yet peed inside this car, I call first bathroom, says Radar.
Shh, mumbles Lacey.
Shh, everybody stop talking. Lacey, you have to get up and pee, Radar says. We're stopping.
You can buy apples, I tell her.
Apples,
she mumbles happily in a cute little girl voice.
I like the apples.
And then after that, you get to drive, Radar says. So you really gotta wake up.
She sits up and in her regular Lacey voice, she says,
I don't so much like you that.
We take the exit and it's 0.9 miles to the BP, which doesn't seem like much, but Radar says that it's probably going to cost us 4 minutes and the South Carolina traffic hurt us, so it could be real trouble with the construction Radar says is an hour ahead of us. But I'm not allowed to worry. Lacey and Ben have now shaken off their sleep well enough to line up together by the sliding door, just like last time, and when we come to a stop in front of the pump, everybody flies out, and I flip the keys to Ben, who catches them in midair. As Radar and I walk briskly past the white man behind the counter, Radar stops when he notices the guy is staring.
Yes, Radar says without embarrassment. I'm wearing a Heritage Not Hate t-shirt over my graduation gown, he says. By the way, do you sell pants here?
The guy looks nonplussed.
We got some camel pants over by the motor oil.
Excellent,
Radar says. And then he turns to me and says,
Be a dear and pick me out some camel pants and maybe a better t-shirt.
Done and done, I answer. Camel pants, it turns out, do not come in regular numbered sizes. They come in medium and large. I grab a pair of medium pants and then a large pink t-shirt that reads World's Best Grandma. I also grab 3 bottles of Bluefin. I hand everything to Lacey when she comes out of the bathroom and then walk into the girls' room since Radar is still in the guys. I don't know that I've ever been inside a girl's bathroom in a gas station before. Differences. No condom machine. Less graffiti. No urinal. The smell is more or less the same, which is rather disappointing.
When I come out, Lacey is paying and Ben is honking the horn, and after a moment of confusion, I jog toward the car.
We lost a minute,
Ben says from the passenger seat. Lacey is turning onto the road that will take us back to the interstate.
Sorry,
Radar answers from the back, where he's sitting next to me, wiggling into his new camo pants beneath his robe.
On the upside, I got pants and a new T-shirt. Where's the shirt, Q?
Lacey hands it to him.
Very funny.
He pulls off the robe and replaces it with a grandma T-shirt, while Ben complains that no one got him any pants. His ass itches, he says. And on second thought, he kind of does need to pee. Hour 11. We hit the construction. The highway narrows to one lane, and we're stuck behind a tractor-trailer driving the precise roadwork speed limit of 35 miles per hour. Lacey is the right driver for the situation. I'd be pounding the steering wheel, but she's just amiably chatting with Ben until she turns half around and says,
Q, I really need to go to the bathroom, and we're losing time behind this truck anyway.
I just nod. I can't blame her. I would have forced us to stop long ago had it been impossible for me to pee in a bottle. It was heroic of her to make it as long as she did. She pulls into an all-night gas station, and I get out to stretch my rubbery legs. When Lacey comes racing back to the minivan, I'm sitting in the driver's seat. I don't even really know how I came to be sitting in the driver's seat, why I end up there and not Lacey. She comes around to the front door, and she sees me there, and the window is open, and I say to her, I can drive. It's my car, after all, and my mission. And she says, really? You're sure? And I say, yeah, I'm good to go. And she just throws open the sliding door and lies down in the first row. Hour 12. It is 2:40 in the morning. Lacey is sleeping. Radar is sleeping. I drive. The road is deserted. Even most of the truck drivers have gone to bed. We go minutes without seeing headlights coming in the opposite direction. Ben keeps me awake, chattering next to me. We're talking about Margot.
Have you given any thought to how we will actually, find Aglo?
He asks me. I have an approximate idea of the intersection, I say. And it's nothing but an intersection.
And she's just gonna be sitting at the corner on the trunk of her car, chin in her hands, waiting for you?
That would certainly be helpful, I answered.
Bro, I gotta say, I'm a little worried that you might, if it doesn't go as you're planning it, you might be really disappointed.
I just want to find her, I say, because I do. I want her to be safe, alive, found. The string played out. The rest is secondary.
Yeah, but I don't know,
Ben says. I can feel him looking over at me, being serious Ben.
Just remember that sometimes the way you think about a person isn't the way they actually are. I always thought that Lacey was so hot and so awesome and so cool, but now when it actually comes to being with her, it's not the exact same. People are different when you can smell them and see them up close, you know?
I know that, I say. I know how long and how badly I wrongly imagined her.
I'm just saying that it was easy for me to like Lacey before. It's easy to like someone from a distance, but when she stopped being this amazing, unattainable thing or whatever, and started being just a regular girl with a weird relationship with food and frequent crankiness who's kind of bossy, then I had to basically start liking a whole different person.
I can feel my cheeks warming.
You're saying I don't really like Margot? After all this, I'm 12 hours inside this car already, and you don't think I care about her because I don't...
I cut myself off.
You think that since you have a girlfriend, you can stand atop the lofty mountain and lecture me? You can be such a...
I stop talking because I see in the outer reaches of the headlights the thing that will shortly kill me. Two cows stand oblivious in the highway. They come into view all at once, a spotted cow in the left lane, and in our lane, an immense creature, the entire width of our car, standing stock still, her head turned back as she appraises us with blank eyes. The cow is flawlessly white, a great white wall of cow that cannot be climbed or ducked or dodged. It can only be hit. I know that Ben sees it too, because I hear his breath stop. They say that your life flashes before your eyes, but for me, that is not the case. Nothing flashes before my eyes except this impossibly vast expanse of snowy fur, now only a second from us. I don't know what to do. No, that's not the problem.
The problem is that there is nothing to do except to hit this white wall and kill it and us both. I slam on the brakes, but out of habit, not expectation. There's absolutely no avoiding this. I raise my hands off the steering wheel. I do not know why I am doing this, but I raise my hands up as if I am surrendering. I'm thinking the most banal thing in the world. I'm thinking that I don't want this to happen. I don't want to die. I don't want my friends to die. And to be honest, as the time slows down and my hands are in the air, I am afforded the chance to think one more thought, and I think about her. I blame her for this ridiculous fatal chase, for putting us at risk, for making me into the kind of jackass who would stay up all night and drive too fast. I would not be dying were it not for her. I would have stayed home, as I have always stayed home, and I would have been safe, and I would have done the one thing I have always wanted to do, which is to grow up. Having surrendered control of the vessel, I am surprised to see a hand on the steering wheel. We are turning before I realize why we are turning, and then I realize that Ben is pulling the wheel toward him, turning us in a hopeless attempt to miss the cow, and then we are on the shoulder and then on the grass. I can hear the tires spinning as Ben turns the wheel hard and fast in the opposite direction. I stop watching. I don't know if my eyes close or if they just cease to see. My stomach and my lungs meet in the middle and crush each other. Something sharp hits my cheek. We stop. I don't know why, but I touch my face. I pull my hand back and there's a streak of blood. I touch my arms with my hands, hugging my arms to myself, but I'm only checking to make sure that they are there. And they are. I look at my legs. They are there. There's some glass. I look around. Bottles are broken. Ben is looking at me. Ben is touching his face. He looks okay. He holds himself as I held myself. His body still works. He is just looking at me. In the rearview mirror, I can see the cow. And now, belatedly, Ben screams. He is staring at me and screaming, his mouth all the way open, the scream low and guttural and terrified. He stops screaming. Something is wrong with me. I feel faint. My chest is burning, and then I gulp air. I had forgotten to breathe. I had been holding my breath the whole time. I feel much better when I start up again. In through the nose, out through the mouth.
"Who is hurt?"
Lacey shouts. She's unbuckled herself from her sleeping position, and she's leaning into the wayback. When I turn around, I can see that the back door has popped open, and for a moment I think that radar has been thrown from the car, but then he sits up. He is running his hands over his face, and he says,
"I'm okay, I'm okay. Is everybody okay?"
Lacey doesn't even respond. She just jumps forward between Ben and me. She is leaning over the apartment's kitchen, and she looks at Ben. She says,
"Sweetie, where are you hurt?"
Her eyes are overfull of water like a swimming pool on a rainy day, and Ben says,
"I'm fine, I'm fine. Q is bleeding."
She turns to me, and I shouldn't cry, but I do, not because it hurts, but because I am scared, and I raised my hands, and Ben saved us, and now there is this girl looking at me, and she looks at me kind of the way a mom does, and that shouldn't crack me open, but it does. I know the cut on my cheek isn't bad, and I'm trying to say so, but I keep crying. Lacey is pressing against the cut with her fingers, thin and soft, and shouting at Ben for something to use as a bandage, and then I've got a small swath of the Confederate flag pressed against my cheek just to the right of my nose. She says,
"Just hold it there tight. You're fine. Does anything else hurt?"
And I say no. That's when I realize that the car is still running, and still in gear, stopped only because I'm still standing on the brakes. I put it into park and turn it off. When I turn it off, I can hear liquid leaking, not dripping so much as pouring.
"We should probably get out," Radar says.
I hold the Confederate flag to my face. The sound of liquid pouring out of the car continues.
"It's gas! It's gonna blow!"
Ben shouts. He throws open the passenger door and takes off, running in a panic. He hurdles a split-rail fence and tears across a hayfield. I get out as well, but not in quite the same hurry. Radar's outside, too, and as Ben hauls ass, Radar is laughing.
"It's the beer," he says.
"What? The beer's all broke,"
he says again, and nods toward the split-open cooler, gallons of foamy liquid pouring out from inside it. We try to call Ben, but he can't hear us because he's too busy screaming, "It's gonna blow!" as he races across the field. His graduation robe flies up in the gray dawn, his bony bare ass exposed. I turn and look out at the highway as I hear a car coming. The white beast and her spotted friend have successfully ambled to the safety of the opposite shoulder, still impassive. Turning back, I realize the minivan is against the fence. I'm assessing damage when Ben finally schleps back to the car. As we spun, we must have grazed the fence because there is a deep gouge on the sliding door, deep enough that if you look closely, you can just see inside the van. But other than that, it looks immaculate. No other dents. No windows broken. No flat tires. I walk around to close the back door and appraise the 210 broken bottles of beer still bubbling. Lacey finds me and puts an arm around me. We are both staring at the rivulet of foaming beer flowing into the drainage ditch beneath us.
What happened?
She asks. I tell her, we were dead, and then Ben managed to spin the car in just the right way, like some kind of brilliant vehicular ballerina. Ben and Radar have crawled underneath the minivan. Neither of them knows shit about cars, but I suppose it makes them feel better. The hem of Ben's robe and his naked calves peek out.
Dude!
Radar shouts.
It looks like fine.
Radar,
I say,
the car spun around like 8 times. Surely it's not fine.
Well, it seems fine,
Radar says.
Hey,
I say, grabbing at Ben's New Balances.
Hey, come out here.
He scoots his way out, and I offer him my hand and help him up. His hands are black with car gunk. I grab him and hug him. If I had not ceded control of the wheel, and if he had not assumed control of the vessel so deftly, I'm sure I'd be dead.
Thank you,
I say, pounding his back, probably too hard.
That was the best damn passenger seat driving I've ever seen in my life.
He pats my uninjured cheek with a greasy hand.
I did it to save myself, not you,
he says.
Believe me when I say that you did not once cross my mind.
I laugh. Nor you mine, I say. Ben looks at me, his mouth on the edge of smiling, and then says,
I mean, that was a big damn cow. It wasn't even a cow so much as it was a land whale.
I laugh. Radar scoots out then.
Dude, I really think it's fine. I mean, we've only lost like 5 minutes. We don't even have to push up the cruising speed.
Lacey is looking at the gouge in the minivan, her lips pursed. What do you think? I ask her.
Go,
she says. Go, Radar votes. Ben puffs out his cheeks and exhales.
Mostly because I'm prone to peer pressure. Go!
Go, I say, but I'm sure as hell not driving anymore. Ben takes the keys from me. We get into the minivan. Radar guides us up a slow sloping embankment and back onto the interstate. We're 542 miles from Agloe. Hour 13. Every couple minutes, Radar says,
Do you guys remember that time when we were all definitely going to die, and then Ben grabbed the steering wheel and dodged a ginormous freaking cow and spun the car like the teacups at Disney World and we didn't die?
Lacey leans across the kitchen, her hand on Ben's knee, and says,
I mean, you are a hero. Do you realize that? They give out medals for this stuff.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I wasn't thinking about none of y'all. I wanted to save my ass.
You liar. You heroic, adorable liar,
she says, and then plants a kiss on his cheek. Radar says,
Hey, guys, do you remember that time I was double seat-belted in the way back and the door flew open and the beer fell out, but I survived completely uninjured? How is that even possible?
Let's play metaphysical I spy,
Lacey says.
I spy with my little eye a hero's heart, a heart that beats not for itself, but for all humanity.
I'm not being modest. I just didn't want to die,
Ben exclaims.
Do you guys remember that one time in the minivan 20 minutes ago that we somehow didn't die?
Hour 14. Once the initial shock passes, we clean. We try to shepherd as much glass from the broken Bluefin bottles as possible onto pieces of paper and then gather them into a single bag for later disposal. The minivan's carpet is soaked with sticky Mountain Dew and Bluefin and Diet Coke, and we try to sop it up with the few napkins we've collected. But this will require a serious car wash, at the very least, and there's no time for that before Agloe. Radar has looked up the side panel replacement I'll need.
$300 plus paint. The cost of this trip keeps going up, but I'll make it back this summer working in my dad's office, and anyway, it's a small ransom to pay for Margot. The sun is rising to our right. My cheek is still bleeding. The Confederate flag is stuck to the wound now, so I no longer need to hold it there. Hour 15.